Good morning, everybody. It's April 7th, 2020. The time is 10 a.m. And I hereby call to order the meeting of the Stewart County Board of Supervisors. We are originating from the administration building in Stewart County, Nevada, and providing access via conference call to the public and to others. If you are on the call, we would ask that you mute your telephone if possible so that people can hear. Audio recordings of our board meetings are posted on our website. Shortly after the meeting is concluded, you can access them at any time by clicking on meetings and agenda. And we, I would ask you to join me if you want as we recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're holding the meeting, while we're not having an in-person meeting in pursuant to Code Section 21.8.1 is because of the COVID-19 pandemic. I would entertain a motion to adopt the agenda. Supervisor
Lisa, so moved.
Okay, thank you. Laura, are you on the phone? Laura, did you come on the phone? This is Linda Merck, and I'll second the motion. Pettins?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Agenda is adopted. Next, updates on COVID-19. Are there any staff updates that would be important to hear right now?
Linda, this is Treasurer Ted Rasmussen.
Hi, Ted.
I just wanted to give you guys an update that we are nearing just 5% of property tax left to collect, which works out to about $8.5 to $9 million left to collect as of this morning.
What was last week?
Last week it was about, I think we started last week with about $19 to $20 million. So in the last week we've had a little over $10 million, about $11 million come in.
Great.
So we are getting closer.
Okay. Thank you. Any other staff updates? Any updates from supervisors? Supervisor Heddens?
No, I guess the only update that I would have is that the, we kind of go along with my liaison report later, is that the Board of Health has a meeting this afternoon at 2 p.m., and that will also be a call-in.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Olson, are you on the phone yet? Okay. I have nothing to report, so we'll go on to discussion and consideration of amending the temporary action of March 27th, 2020, and that was the action where we sent employees home to work when possible. We revised the return to work, and we're suggesting now, or considering, revising the return to work date to be May 1, 2020, with all other direction remaining in place. As you might recall, the action we took was to be effective, that people were to return to work next Monday, which is, I believe, April 13th. So we were going to discuss and consider revising that to be more consistent with what the governor has proclaimed since. Alyssa, you had some, are you on the phone? I know you had some things that you wanted to share with us.
Sure, yes, I am on the phone. I just want to clarify the board's direction. Last time we did put everybody in pay status, whether they were teleworking or if they couldn't work, they got paid their regular hours. And I just want the board to clarify if they can, want to continue doing that through May 1st. And to this point, our interns that were regularly scheduled or temporaries that were regularly scheduled hours, they have consistent hours they're scheduled for, were also included. So I just wanted the board to clarify that when they're making their action. Two other things I want the board to consider, you know, we do have some new hires that are supposed to start. I know departments and offices are working with them to possibly push back their start dates if it's able to do that. There are some departments that aren't able to do that. They do need the employees to work. And then we're getting into our seasonal and temporary employee situation where we have a lot of them come on in May. I would just like to encourage maybe see if we can hold off until a mid-May start date on those, depending on each department's program of where they want to do that. At least have them start thinking about that if this doesn't clear up by the beginning of May.
So you're saying new hires?
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Linda.
You said new hires, push back start date if possible, tentatively look at mid-May, but if you can't push it back, go ahead and start them now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a few, like if we have new employees starting in the jail, that's not applicable. They do need them to start, or I know, you know, the auditor's office is still going to have an election, but if it's possible, I mean, we can't bring, if our offices are closed and they're unable to telework, we can't have new employees starting within the
This is Laura. So. All right, I apologize. My internet went down.
Glad to have you with us.
Hello?
Can you
All right, where are we?
Alyssa just reported on what we were looking at on agenda item 6. Alyssa, could you do another quick summary of that for Laura's report?
Could you please? Yeah.
No. I just wanted the board to consider, you know, last action that was taken, we had employees go home and telework if they could. If they weren't able to telework, we did pay their regular wages. This included our temporary interns that were scheduled to work. And I needed the board to clarify if we intend on continuing on with that process or if there were any changes to that. We also want to try to look out to May and just try to look at those start dates for seasonal, maybe push those back if we can, have departments and offices work to get a plan in place for that if we're not able to return May 1st because of this. And then if for new hires, if we're starting negotiating start dates, if possible, try to keep that past the May 1st. Since we won't be having many people in the office to do the training. There are some departments and offices that can't, such as the sheriff's office, push those dates off because they need the employees to report.
Any other questions for Alyssa?
I don't have any questions for Alyssa about that, no. Thank you.
Okay. Now, I guess this is Lisa. My one question was if we're pushing for folks to work at home, is that still under the COVID administration? Are we extending that out, or is that the recommendation?
It would be the same. The COVID pay only goes into effect if they fall under those circumstances. You know, they've been exposed and they're unable to work. If they're working, it's regular hours work. If they're unable to work, we're paying them that admin leave.
Got you.
Yeah, so it'd be, if the board wants to continue with that, through May 1st.
Yes. So all my questions are answered then. This is Linda again. I would ask that we just discuss it. There's about three or four things that might go into this motion, so just discuss them one at a time. The first one would be the general revising return to work date to be May 1, 2020. Let's discuss that and see how we feel about that. Supervisors?
This is Laura. I understand that it's for safety of both of the employees and for the general public, okay? But if we extend this any further, I really would like us for the departments that the Board of Supervisors oversees to take a look at how we can make use of anyone who is not doing work from home, but, you know, who can maybe come into the EOC or do some other kind of work, help another department keep up with their non-essential work. I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with there being employees who are sitting at home and getting a paycheck for not doing anything when we've got other employees who are having to come to work. So on that note, the elected officials are willing to do that voluntarily, but the other elected officials, scholarships, can't do anything about that. So that is my only concern about extending it, is that I'd like to try and get as much work as possible out of each employee who's not coming in.
Lisa, do you have any thoughts regarding the May 1, 2020 return to work date?
I don't have what the May 1, 2020 it's consistent with what the governor is recommending. So I don't have an issue with that. The comments that Laura said you made as well, I recognize that. What I don't know, and I see more interest, is I know folks working in the EOC have gone through specific training, and I just don't know how quickly to get somebody up to speed and to be helpful versus a hindrance, in the staffing and doing the data entry and all that. I'm not sure the amount of training that we need to have folks to help support that initiative. But if you're just looking at the May 1st, that I'm fine with.
And Laura, so I think what you're talking about, making use of employees who are not currently working, and we could talk about that at the CCMT meeting tomorrow, because all the elected officials and department heads will be there. So we could, rather than try to add that to a motion, we could talk about it then. Okay, good. Now, the second thing, that's the first thing. The second thing is paying interns through April 30th. Is that okay with people?
I'm fine with it. This is Laura. And I'm fine with it. It goes along with our philosophy about why we're doing this in the first place, is to keep people safe, keep the public safe, and make sure that our employees hopefully stay healthy so that they can come back and get back to work as soon as possible. And that would include our interns.
Okay. And Lisa, any thoughts? That's okay. Then the third thing is with new hires, to push back start dates if possible, tentatively mid-May, however, if they are essential and need to be at the office, such as the jailer at the workplace, or can work from do essential work at home, then it would be okay to start them sooner than that. Is that okay?
This is Lisa. Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense. But if you don't have folks who are able to do the training because they are working at home doing self-distancing, it makes a lot of sense to me. But if you can, to have them pull off the mid-May or later, but certainly understand departments such as, for example, the Sheriff's Department, if they're hiring a jailer or something, that is a whole different situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Same thing. There's Lisa.
Okay. So do you feel a need to add any of that other than the May 1st return to work date into a motion, or can we just issue some direction?
I say let's just issue direction. Seemed to work last time, as we were extending some things just with a email afterwards. So I would make a motion that we extend the administrative leave, I guess we're calling it, until May 1st.
Okay, what's the return to work date from May 1st?
Yes.
With the return to work date to be May 1st, Shelley's got that. Is there a second?
Yes.
I'll stop it.
Thanks, Lisa. Any further discussion? I will issue the direction then in an email.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you. And I just want to say thanks. You're going to have to carry me a little bit through this because I don't have access then to my files. So I'm literally just kind of following along on the agenda with the rear view tickets, okay?
Okay. Okay, then if there's no further discussion, Olson?
Aye.
Heaven?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Motion is carried. Thank you. And Alyssa, thank you for putting together those concerns that you had. It's good to get those taken care of. Next is public comment number one for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there any member of the public who would like to make a comment at this point?
There is no one on the cast. I still have cast fee.
Thank you. Okay. I will close public comment session then. We have no item eight is items brought before the board with requests for immediate action. I don't believe we have any. Item nine is consideration of a proclamation of April 2020 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and the proclamation has been put on our agenda, so it's available on the website. Is Tess Cody here?
I am.
Tess, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well.
Good. Would you like to just make a few comments about the proclamation before we vote on it?
Yeah, this is a general set of thank yous to the board for considering adopting this proclamation. Each April as a nation, we recognize Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and so this April, despite a strange time that we are in, a challenging time, we're looking to recognize the month again because the work continues, and just ask that the board help us recognize sexual assault impact it has right here in Story County, and of course the work that we as Story County residents can all do to help combat it. And I don't remember the logistics we've used in the past of who reads what from that, so guide me if you need anything more, but thank you again for considering the proclamation.
Certainly. Let me find it. Hold on a second. That's what I thought. My computer kicked me out. I think I have a hard copy here. Tess, do you have it in front of you?
Do you want to read it?
Yes,
I have it in front of me too.
Tess, why don't you just read it, if you don't mind?
I'm on it. And I'll read until maybe the kind of adapting sentence I think is that bolded one at the bottom. So
okay.
Here we go. Sexual Assault Awareness Month, April 2020. In the United States, April Sexual Assault Awareness Month, or SAM. The goal of SAM is to raise public awareness about sexual violence and educate communities on how to prevent it. SAM calls attention to the fact that sexual harassment, assault, and abuse are widespread and impact every person in this community. Rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment harm our community, and the statistics show that 1 in 5 women and 1 in 67 men will be raped or sexually assaulted at some point in their lives. Child sexual abuse prevention must be a priority to confront the reality that 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 4 girls will experience sexual assault before age 18. On campus, 1 in 5 women and 1 in 16 men are sexually assaulted during their time in college. This year, Sexual Assault Awareness Month is celebrating its 19th anniversary. The theme of this year's campaign is I Ask. It helps empower all of us to put consent into practice and shares the message that asking for consent is a normal and necessary practice.
I join advocates and communities across the country in taking action to prevent sexual violence. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and each day of the year is an opportunity to create change for the future. I would entertain a motion for adoption of the proclamation.
So moved.
Would you accept the friendly amendment that we change the word I to we, the Story County Board of Supervisors?
I've signed it already on behalf of the Story County Board of Supervisors. I can cross out I and put we if you need that.
Sure. Yeah, okay. So,
do you have it in the
friendly?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Any further discussion? Kevin?
None.
Kevin?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Proclamation is adopted. And Tess, thank you very much for getting that to us. And I think you're the next on the agenda as well with an agency report.
Yeah, yes. So again, thank you for taking the time just kind of pause as we're in this strange time and really kind of look at what's still happening in the county. I want to say thank you for your continued support to meet the needs of Story County crime victims through the asset process. So the report I prepared and I think is on the website and all of that. It's just a bit of updates about our COVID response as well as some information about our services from the past year and just a few highlights of some projects that we have in the works. So kind of taking and walking you through that report, I think one of my biggest takeaways from the last year is I have just really been blown away by some of the survivors that we have served. I use the word tenacity in my report, and that feels appropriate. They really move to mountains and figure some things out for themselves and their family, and I am just constantly amazed by that. I'm also really amazed by our staff. I shared an example in my report of just some of their creativity. I feel like we've done some really interesting things for survivors in the last year, and I believe that's kind of foundational to our agency, and we'll continue to do that. An example, we had an advocate who is really passionate about working with survivors who have disabilities and brought in a new tool that is a picture-based tool that assists some nonverbal survivors in telling the judge how they're impacted when they're considering sentencing. Sometimes victims have a right to put in a victim impact statement to have that considered. And it, for a lot of folks, that really feels like the moment where they get to be heard. The criminal justice process is designed about fact-finding and that, but sometimes it doesn't always account for the emotional component to it. And so that victim impact statement is really for a lot of survivors where that piece gets matched in the process. And so opening the door to really allow more survivors to participate in a meaningful way in that process has been really important. And so I was really just impressed with this kind of spin on a way to participate, and we've already seen that tool put into action, so really excited about that. I included some of our annual data. If you are a data nerd like me about some of our services, we served over 1,400 survivors across our service area this last year. That included just short of 600 survivors from Story County, 596, with close to 4,000 hours of service, 3,726 and a half hours of service. For us, one of the things that I think was noticeable was that we actually provided a lot more bed nights of emergency shelter. And those service hours that we're seeing kind of rise. And I think there's kind of two stories there. One, I think I shared the last time I was with you all a year ago that we were experiencing quite a bit of staff turnover in our emergency shelter. And we've taken a lot of steps to work to stabilize our staff. So there's less turnover. And it turns out when you have a more stable staff, You can serve more people. And so that's the story of our emergency shelters. We've just been able to make sure that we utilize all of our beds by having the staff to help us do that. We'll talk a little bit more about what's happening with our shelter kind of in response to COVID-19 in a moment. We have some new database, so some of our service hours, I think we're just doing a better job of capturing the work that we do. So I'll keep my radar on that and keep you updated as time unfolds with that one. I included in my report how we are. I know the board likes to hear how we are in terms of the year spent out of our asset dollars. I included the figures kind of accurate through the claims process where we're at. We've claimed out of, or nearly claimed out of, most of our asset categories. We still have funds remaining in our emergency housing or shelter contract and some within our domestic abuse contract, but we believe that we are on track to spend those dollars out for the year. I wanted to give the board some quick updates about some of the changes and adaptations we've made in response to COVID-19. It sounds very much in line with what you're doing for many of your employees. We mid-March started having folks who were able to work from home work remotely. That included making a lot of adaptations to how we provide services, so things like a lot of home-based services, tech-based services, and we've been training our staff to do, hear the phrase, it's a video call-based counseling appointment or crisis appointment. And so we got getting that up and running, and so really making some pivots there. We've been working with staff, again, to figure out how to make sure that they're, when they're working from home, that they have confidential space and having ways to secure and lock confidential files. We have actually shifted to where we are no longer responding in person to the hospital. That in addition to there, just that you may or may not have heard of some of the announcements from the Storrs County START sexual assault response team as a whole. There's some procedural changes that are happening where during business hours, sexual assault exams are all happening over at Teeland rather than at Mary Greeley. And just kind of doing some shuffling and planning there to get survivors to the right location as we kind of scale and pivot in an attempt to keep everybody safer and healthier and keep resources where they need to be devoted at the other emergency rooms. So there's lots of changes happening, and I would say like my experience with things like sexual assault exams and just honestly how survivors are accessing court systems and all that is changing very fast, very frequently. And so we're doing our best to keep ourselves and survivors up to date on all of those changes. As an agency, another kind of big pivot that happened for us has to do with our operations of our emergency shelter. We were given a lot of guidance from the CDC and from HUD about distancing between clients, and a lot of the guidance is designed for large-scale mass shelters where everybody's kind of in one big room. You think of the lots of beds in one space, which is not quite how our shelter is designed. And because of that, because we have a scattered site model, what we have done is we have changed to where we reduced our census down. We paused intakes for a second. It was a couple days to reduce our census down to where we now have only one individual or one family unit per bedroom. We're in the process of evaluating whether it should be restricted by number of bedrooms or restricted by number of bathrooms. So there might be another change to come, but currently it's one individual or one family per bedroom. So everybody's got their own bedroom, and that's to help be in line with some of the guidelines around facing those clients. And so we've done a lot of things around making sure that if there were things like shelter in place orders or just to reduce the frequency that our staff are physically in the shelter, we've done some stockpiling of supplies and food and things like that, and continue to meet with those shelter clients via some of the platforms I talked about before, phone, text, or that video conferencing sort of option. So we have still now, we are we've already begun moving intakes within our shelter space, but with that limiting factor of per bed, bedroom rather than, we used to at times if we had, say, two single adults, they would potentially be doubled up in one bedroom. So we're kind of monitoring what that means for the number of beds we have available and what our total bed night of service that we'll be providing. Because, you know, with a weird situation, we might have it where we have every bed actually full, just depending on the number of, you know, parents with children. But we also might have it where our census, because of the number of bedrooms we have, is actually half. And so just trying to figure out how we safely serve both staff and clients in a position to be successful. We have made arrangements, but the good thing about our shelter structure is if somebody needs to quarantine, we would just not, like if they were in the unit and we had an empty bedroom, we would not fill that other bedroom. So we could allow somebody, if they disclosed a need to quarantine, we could probably accommodate that. And so we feel fortunate that our structure actually kind of blends itself to the strength to continue to meet the needs of survivors. It is a reduced capacity, but we're working to be creative, I would say, on that front and figuring out how we safely do intakes and do a lot of problem solving on that front. We've posted a lot of our events, so we've been a little bit bummed related to Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but we have been kind of currently reorganizing, so keep your eyes open for some kind of virtual Sexual Health Awareness Month events. I think we're going to try and do some, what's it called? I can think of the word. Where you do a Netflix watch party and some movies and some things like that. So we'll be announcing those as the month moves forward and are excited to learn some new skills and try some things. As we've pivoted a lot of our community engagement work to this kind of online platform, it's been, you know, hit or miss, but I did want to share with the board one success that I'm actually really interested to see how it continues after this kind of public health crisis, which is we have really active support groups running. It was in person, and so in response to COVID, we stopped in-person support groups, but we actually shifted it into an online space, and it's been really active, and I've been so surprised to see that kind of community support and working together of survivors continue, because we just weren't really sure how moving into that sort of space would work. And I'm excited about it in part because I think, you know, I think there's something that you just can't replace with the value of an in-person group. However, we have long had challenges where, you know, you have, you know, a survivor who lives up in Story City and has this challenge in terms of getting to a group that's offered in AIMS. You know, how can we actually create those spaces in the future through some of these online tools? So, it's, you know, it's one of those weird things where I think there's going to be some innovation that comes from this that will carry through even after. So I'm excited to kind of watch and see that what we take and learn from this. We have put those measures in place until April 13th, though much like yourselves, we're intending to most likely follow the governor's guidelines to extend them to the end of the month and continue to monitor from there. Kind of the last, just very quickly and briefly, updates that I have is still in the works on a project we call Framework Future, which is about doing some shelter repairs. And the other thing we're working on is something we're calling Accessing Our History. It's building up to our 45th anniversary, which will be in February 2021, doing a bunch of interviews and gathering of stories from past volunteers, board staff. Still reaching out to folks to continue to do that interviewing and gather those stories so we can combine them into kind of a big culminating, hopefully, podcast-style radio show in honor of our 45th. So if you or other folks you know have a connection to the movement or the work, know that we'll probably be knocking on your door in the near future. And we're really excited. I feel like, again, I've just been amazed by the stories that we've heard from the work in the past and just really humbled by the leadership that folks here in Story County have had in the movement to end violence in this state, but also, of course, in this community. I think those are the main highlights from my report. If there are any questions, I'm ready for them.
Any questions from the board? Jeff,
I don't have the time. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you for your support and for all the work you've done to address violence in Troy County.
Jess, this is Linda. I'm a former Access board member and a former Access volunteer, and I would love to be involved in your project. So give me a call sometime.
Perfect. You were just the person I was alluding to right there, Linda. So we're on the same wavelength.
Okay. We'll be in touch. Thanks. And I've seen all the statistics, and most of them are anecdotal, but about rises in domestic violence, so stay-at-home orders or shelter-in-home, whatever we're calling them. And I do feel like your services are essential and even more so right now. So thank you for all you're doing to continue to reach out to victims.
So this is Laura. Hi. So I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we good?
Okay. All right. Sorry. So, Kat, my question has to do with the creativeness you're needing to go through now because of COVID. And my first question is, have you had to turn anybody away? And second question is, have you discussed with the asset admin team any possible additional needs or flexibility in funding, et cetera, that you may have?
Great question. So yes, we have had to turn people away. Here's the heartbreaking thing. Every year, whether there's a public health crisis or not, we've had to turn away survivors. We work really hard. That's kind of harsh language to say turn away. I know it's an intimidating language. We work really hard to have multiple strategies. One, which is shelter diversion, is the way, the lingo. And it's doing things like, can I buy a bus ticket to get you to stay with your sister who's safe? And some of those sorts of strategies. So we continue to use that sort of creative problem solving to try to make it so it's not so much a turn away from shelter as much as getting them to a different option that might be a little longer term than shelter. So we've done that. We have continued to do that work, and we've actually really prioritized that work in the last 4 weeks. To be honest, that's been where we've really been focusing a lot of energy and dollars. The other thing is we've worked to get people to other shelters, and I'm sure it's going to come as no surprise to you that that is a really hard one because we're not alone in adapting our shelter beds and census count. ERP has made some really big pivots to how they're sheltering. They're using hotel space and have limited beds. They're able to do that way. And our neighbors to the north, Fort Dodge, they are the kind of regional domestic violence shelter for our region that we're part of. They're similarly moving towards hotel space, but it's limited numbers because of funding. And so it's tricky to, if we can't help somebody, it's very tricky to find a place for them to go. And so I kind of, what Linda alluded to, I kind of hold my breath a little bit because I think while we are seeing kind of a normal flow rate, even slightly reduced right now, I think that is a community pausing for a couple weeks here. You know, I think people are taking seriously some of this. But a lot of the research around other disasters like Katrina and they really have pointed to 30 to 45 weeks in is where you'll see a high demand for services. So I think while we are what I would describe as kind of normal right now, I think we're kind of holding our breath a little bit for what's to come in the next couple of weeks and really seeing trying to play it by ear between now and then. We have had some conversations with the asset team. They have granted to us and ERP and some others some flexibility in how we use our remaining dollars, and they have said that you can do some kind of shuffling, and the City of Ames granted that. Here's what's really challenging, I would say, is it's good to have some flexibility in the already allocated dollars. However, for us, most of those already allocated dollars are tied up in expenses that don't change. So, for example, they're going to pay our staff salaries, they're going to pay the rent on one of our rented shelter spaces. Those expenses are still there, and so I appreciate the thoughtfulness and flexibility. I think some other agencies just might have greater ability to use that flexibility than we do because, for example, I think we receive some dollars that are tied to emergency financial assistance, and so they're able to kind of pivot from, you know, paying somebody's, you know, emergency utility bill to paying for a hotel bed. You know, we don't receive those particular dollars from asset, and so we're in the process of really analyzing, okay, what could we free up? And so that's honestly my task for the next couple weeks is figuring out what any of our grant dollars can we pivot and shuffle around and what actually makes sense. So, for example, kind of here, you might be asking something like, you know, since we're reducing our census and bed count essentially in our shelter, could we pick some up by offering hotel stays? What starts to get really mucky for us is we have to provide equivalent sheltering services. And so if I don't put a hard cap on the number of nights somebody stays in our shelter unit, I need to do something equivalent with a hotel stay, and financially that's a really tricky move for us. And so If you're doing all of your stays in a hotel, you could put a cap at something like 14 days or something like that and have equity. And so we need to figure out if what each animal should be doing. And so if folks have great recommendations on that front, I am continuing to absorb our practice, but we've really focused so far on how to pivot and make our current space safe. And so,
thank you. This is Linda.
So my next question, I had a follow-up to that, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to try to
I understand that, Linda, but I think this is important to ask this next question, okay?
Okay,
I'm going to ask briefly, okay? If certain counties were to look at in some way the asset or whatever to make arrangements for some additional funding for like hotel rooms or et cetera, is that something that you'd like to know more about?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Go ahead, Linda. Sorry. I just thought we needed to get this out.
Okay, I'm just going to thank Jeff and encourage her to continue to work with the asset administrative team on this because I know they will be bringing recommendations to us. Jeff, thanks for calling in today and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm going to move us on then to agenda item 11, consideration of minutes. And we have a request from Shelley. When your supervisors, when you're making a motion, could you state your name and seconding and state your name for the record? She says it's kind of hard to hear. So I would entertain a motion for consideration of minutes of the March 27th and the March 31st meetings.
This is for Lisa.
So moved.
No, go.
I'll second.
Motion by Olson, second by Heddens. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Minister approved. Thank you. Remember to alternate. Consideration of personnel actions. I'd entertain a motion.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Warren, second.
Okay. There's no further discussion. Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Motion carried. Next is the consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items listed. Laura, it's your turn.
This is Laura.
I move.
This is Lisa. I second.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Consent agenda is approved, and now we are on to public hearing items, I believe, of which there are none. And then additional items, under 15, we have Lisa Markley here for discussion consideration of the medical examiner transportation bid. Am I correct that we have one bid?
You are correct that we have one bid, yeah.
If you want to come up here and
closer to the apparatus. I submitted the bid with the documentation. We have one bid. It's double what we're paying right now for transport. We're paying $400 per, and this bid is for $800. It's from Soderstrom, Reimer, a.k.a. Adams. My comments are this is not something that you can predict, obviously. When we put budgets together, we make the statement that we'll pay what we have to pay for all of these services. At this point in time this year, we budgeted $100,000. I'm looking we're going to have to amend another $25,000 in right now for all medical examiner, not just transport, obviously. I did a little research for the last 4 years. 4 years ago, we did 21. 2 years ago, we did 43 total. Last year, we did 22 total, so it fluctuated by 20 over the year, consistently. I don't ask me how, I don't understand, but obviously we can't predict these things. So I'm looking at the rest of the year, perhaps an additional $4,000 to $5,000 will be needed, as opposed to what we had planned originally before we found out that the $400 per transport was going to be discontinuing on April 15th. The recommendation I would have is that we go ahead and accept this bid, since it's the only one we got. I have spoken to Ethan about this, and Ethan and I have gone over the provider agreement. Ethan's gone over the provider agreement. The one recommendation we would say is, as opposed to a 5-year contract, doing a 2-year contract right now. That's totally the discretion of the board as to what kind of a contract you do. But a 2-year contract would give us the opportunity to put it back out there when we're not in the middle of the pandemic. If it's the board's pleasure, I would say we go ahead with a provider agreement with Adams/Soderstrom for the current bid that they have out there, and we'll bring it back next week for signature. It'll be on April 16th.
Any questions?
Lisa, this is Lisa. So, you know, it's probably hard to know because each county is going to be a bit different and stuff. But do you know in other areas what, you know, is this a normal kind of transportation cost? Does this seem extremely high? I'm just trying to get a better understanding. And I understand we're also, you know, there's a challenge in that we only have one bid.
Correct. I wish I could answer that question better. I know that Story County has paid Hamilton County for a couple of deaths and that happened in Hamilton County that were actually Story County residents. Hardin County, I think we paid one or two. The transports that I'm seeing on those bills range from $350 to $450. I agree. I think this is kind of high. The other thing that Ethan recommended, Ethan commented to me is, you know, can we go back and say, this is high, will you take X number of dollars as opposed to $800 for the next 2 years? I don't know how that would work. Yeah, one bit.
Other questions?
This is Laura. I have more of a comment, and it is, I think it's very telling that when we were at the lower price, our current provider left us. So I certainly, I don't know whether it's valid to go and negotiate, especially in these days, we hope they don't have any business from COVID directly, but even if they do and we end up having to pay for it, I do say, as I was looking over the Board of Health agenda, they're discussing the surge plan, the drastic surge plan, and in there is some noting about who has to cover costs for bodies and et cetera. So I thought about that as I was thinking about this contract. And I think at this point, the fact that we got a quote and our previous provider walked away tells us that we should take those quotes and not go back and risk losing them by trying to reduce at this point. If Ethan suggests a 2-year contract and they're happy that on the other end Soderstrom is happy with it, I think that's good. Then we go look at it again, or a board goes and looks at it again in 2 years. I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. The only thing I was thinking was if, because we're doing a shorter contract, and maybe they anticipate that they'd be willing to waive that annual increase of $50 per call. And you could ask them, but if they say no, and I'm not sold on that. So.
And not sold on the increase, you mean?
Yeah, I that was the only thing I was thinking. Not to say, could you take a lower amount, but since we're doing a shorter contract, could you delete $50 and we just do the flat 800? But I don't know that it saves us that much.
And the bid you put out did not specify how long the contract was going to be for now.
Oh, okay. Then I kind of withdraw the suggestion. I would entertain a motion for approval of a 2-year contract with Thurston Reimers, Inc.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Laura, second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
This is Lisa. I have a question. So what would be if they would come back and say, no, they're not going to take a 2-year contract, we want the 5?
My understanding is we did not specify the length of the contract in our RFP.
Oh, okay. I didn't quite catch that. Okay. Thank you.
Is that correctly? Correct. So not an issue. Maybe. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Any further questions? Okay. I've lost track. Whose motion was it? Was it yours, Lisa? Okay. Tedens.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Okay. It's approved. And the medical examiner had asked me what we were doing, so I'll send him a follow-up email to let him know. Next is we have discussion consideration to temporarily park Toyota RAV4 at Story County Community Services parking lot from Planning and Development Director Jerry Moore. Jerry submitted a memo about this, and I think this is something we've already done with another department. So I don't have any
questions. Yes, we did that with the fire in the hall.
Yes. So does anybody have any questions?
No.
Okay.
No.
I would entertain a motion. Laura, it's your turn.
I would move that we approve parking of the RAV4 at the Human Services Center in Ames to allow ease of access for the planning and development staff.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. Olson?
Aye.
Tedens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. Okay, now we are on to 16, which is a discussion and consideration of resolution 20-81, Anthony Acres Residential Partial Subdivision Market. I don't know about the other board members. I did take time. I went through all of the PowerPoint staff report, all the documents. I have no questions. It seems like it's a fairly straightforward subdivision request. Do any of the other supervisors have questions? Or do you?
This is Laura. I have no questions. It was very straightforward, easy to read, easy to see what's going on. Certainly, we've done this before with you.
Yeah, and this is Lisa. I have no questions either. I thought the information provided was very detailed and answered my questions along the way.
Okay, super.
I did want to mention one thing, Supervisors, if I could. The posted resolution was missing. The phrase is legal title holder of said real estate. That did get added this morning.
That's the second whereas of the resolution. Correct?
Yep, I just want to clarify that happened. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Marcus, for getting that corrected. Okay. Is there any further discussion? If not, I would entertain a motion. I think Lisa, it's your turn.
Correct. I move that we approve resolution 20-81.
Aye. Second.
Okay. And Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution 20-81 is adopted. Then we'll go on to department reports. And Jerry, we got your report, have had an opportunity to review it, so I don't think you need to go over it unless there's something you want to just quickly note, if you're on the phone. I don't know that you are.
Yes, I am here, board. Good morning.
Good morning.
I would entertain any questions that you might have about anything that we posted. I want to thank the staff for helping put it together.
Okay. Any questions for Jerry?
This is Laura, and I saw a very long list of in progress. So I'm asking you kind of briefly, is it working to still be working remotely with that long list of in progress? Do you feel like you guys are still able to function?
Yeah, I would say that we're doing very well. As I mentioned before, most of our communication with the general public occurs through emails that we receive with the applications and the narrative and additional information. Plus, we get information in the mail. So, and our staff is pretty adept to technology, and so I think we're adapting pretty well.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. That's good to know.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jerry, for the thorough report. And I want to thank you in particular for your work at the EOC these days. That's very, I know that's appreciated.
The entire staff helped, and it was an honor to do that. And we're on standby in case they need us in the future. We'll certainly be available to assist.
Good. And I was handed, I was handed a note a little while ago. Somebody asked the ESC about, did they need help right now? They don't need anyone additional right now. If something changes, they will let us know. So that kind of goes to the earlier question about employees who might be working from home. Could they come and work at the EOC? Don't encourage that until we hear that there's a need, because otherwise that just takes more time of Keith and Melissa to answer emails and say, no, we don't need you right now. No, we don't need you right now. So we'll let people know if we have need there. Now we're on to other reports. There are none. Next, upcoming agenda items. So the other two supervisors, do you have some agenda items to suggest it for the next meeting?
I don't at this particular time. This is Lisa.
Okay.
And Ms. Flores, I'm still having computer problems in addition to the internet problems, and just still trying to get that new work innovation and opportunity back contract over to Ethan. That's really all that I see on my agenda.
Okay. And I have nothing. We do have, I would just remind everybody, we will at 10 o'clock tomorrow have a conference call CCMT meeting. We'll go on to public forum number 2, comments from public on items not on the agenda. We, of course, can't take any action on them due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Does any members of the public have anything to comment on? Thank you. In that case, then, I would entertain a motion for adjournment. Don't know whose turn it is.
No. You got liaison
assignments. Thank you. Anything we haven't covered so far? Liaison assignments.
This is Lisa. Just to give you a quick update. So the Children's Mental Health group, they have canceled their meeting for this month. So they're still just postponed until next month, and then figure out how will work if the circumstance continues. Boost did a first round of interviews. We're actually doing a second round this week, so I have that one tomorrow and one on Friday. Regular Boost meeting I have Thursday evening, and then Friday I have also the DCAT, Story County DCAT meeting. All of them are by Zoom or other technical means, because obviously you're not meeting in person under the current circumstances.
This is Laura, and I have a question for Lisa. Is there anything for Board of Health agenda and yes. Surge? the surge draft. Will that be coming to us after the Board of Health approves this? I didn't see us listed as one of the primary partners there.
You know, that is something I will ask about that. I would almost assume so, but I know that was a last, kind of a last minute agenda item that I think that was put on the agenda.
Okay. The reason I'm asking, and it would make sense, I mean, if it doesn't come to us either way, but the clause in there or the paragraphs in there that talk about each county or city entity would be responsible for housing people who were determined to be homeless, that's the phrase used, as in the event that they were in the hospital, they got a little better, but they still needed to leave the hospital to make room for somebody else, okay? And they couldn't go home because they had a vulnerable or a high-risk adult at home, or they still needed some kind of care. That, and so I was just wondering about, more needing more detail. I think the Board of Supervisors on that to determine exactly how would we be required to carry that out. I mean, if we send them to a hotel room, but they still need help, do we have to provide the help, the nursing services too? You know, or a home carpet or whatever. So that's why I was just kind of asking, is at what point, you know, could we get involved? And maybe some of that will come up this afternoon.
Right. Yeah. No, those are very good questions. Those are some of the along the same line of questions that I have as well. As I said, I think Les brought this forward to Stephanie like later Friday that she wanted on the
sure.
added to the agenda.
Well, thanks. I'll leave it in your capable hands then, just as those up. For me, I've got a couple of phone meetings. I'm going to go be in on the Chamber/AAC call with Senator Ertz tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Then I'll get off at 10 o'clock to come over to the CCMT meeting. The AAC has a meeting on the event board at 7 o'clock on Friday morning. That's going to be electronically also. They're anticipating it to be a very short meeting, just a little bit more updates about the impact on our county as far as the economic business impact. So I'll let you guys know about that. And then Saturday I had a board meeting on Wednesday afternoon, also electronically, and they're going to be talking more about what they're doing with COVID, et cetera. So I'll call into that one. Both as her and to us also, so we can keep aware. And other than that, I think everybody's doing a miraculous job, I believe, of dealing with different circumstances. And I applaud everybody. I'm done. Thank you.
Story Town meeting is canceled. The Emergency Management Commission is going to meet next Wednesday the 15th by Zoom. I think we have a special CCMT meeting tomorrow by conference call. Friday we'll have a special board meeting, still scheduled by conference call. I think that's pretty much it for my agenda. A couple of the meetings I'll probably be sitting in on. So I have nothing else, then I will entertain a motion for adjournment.
This is Lisa, so moved. This is Laura, second.
Pedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.